Welcome, everybody, to another episode of RP Grinders, episode 473 to be correct. I am your host, Frank Branches, alongside my trusty cohort, Eric the Great. Breakman the Bold's on assignment. He'll be back next week. He got caught up in the work bug. Nonetheless, we're going to march forward. Eric, how was your week, man?
It was all right.
Yeah.
The second half, not so great.
Yeah. Well, it happens, man. I mean,
I got like post-nasal drip.
Ooh, that shit sucks. What was that beep?
That's for my phone.
Oh.
And that looks like R2-D2. I don't think I noticed that.
It looks like Wyland's in chat. He says, excuses.
Your microphone, that is.
Yeah. Is it mine?
And the microphone that you have kind of looks like R2-D2.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you see it. It's, I have to hold it up. Like, I'm not a professional. I don't have the YouTube bucks that a lot of people have. But, you know.
Yeah, Frank's working. By working, I mean playing Halo.
Yeah, exactly. He's probably playing Halo. Exactly right, Wyland. That's no excuse, man. You need to get your ass on the show. Bridget's in chat. What's up, Bridget? She says, Frankie Boo, the countdown. Yes, she'll be here in a couple weeks. I'm getting excited. All right, Eric, let's start with the news. Let's get that stuff done and out of the way so we can get into some fun stuff here.
Okay, from RPG site, we've got Underworld Ascendant, and it's got a new video, which we can't show here, but maybe you can.
I will in just a second, as soon as I can.
And it's got a release window. It says, behind the scenes, Other Side Entertainment has been slowly toiling away at Underworld Ascendant, the follow-up to the highly influential Ultima Underworld, the Stygian Abyss, which released 25 years ago. So while early backers have had access to the pre-alpha version of the RPG, we haven't heard much of a peep about the game in public since its initial Kickstarter back in 2015. I didn't even know this was a thing.
No,
I may have heard of it, and I just forgot.
I have. We've talked about it on the show probably, what, 2-3 years ago, Eric. And I remember thinking at the time it was pretty exciting. But I think the window for this game being exciting is pretty much past. It looks good. It's not groundbreaking, I don't think. They haven't shown much gameplay. I mean, it looks pretty. That's about the best that I can say about it. It looks all right. You know, it's not going to, you know, capture the hearts and, you know, minds of everybody. I do have a video of it going right now on the stream, but it doesn't.
Anyways, the release window is somewhere in the second half of 2018.
Yeah, so I mean, it's going to be swallowed in a sea of other games, but it's something that I'll take a look at. I'll probably play most likely at a discount.
I don't know how you'll play it. It's a PC game.
Well, a lot of the PC games come to Xbox eventually, dude. Like,
you'll have to wait until 2019 for that, then.
Yeah, maybe. But trust me, I've got enough to play. I'm not 100% worried about that game. There's plenty of other things to play. All right, next story comes to us from RPGsite.net. Hakuoki Edo Blossom, set to release in March. So it'll release on March 13th in North America and March 16th in Europe. So the Euros out there for the PlayStation Vita. I mean, getting a Vita release is kind of a big thing, so that's cool. It's got some cool art that I put up on the screen. And it gives you a short little synopsis. There's an announcement. Demon Vice Commander of the Shinsengumi, coping with the Shin Tsugumi's fracturing after losing the Battle of Toba, Fushimi, and Kyoto. In the face of shifting tides, the normally stern disciplinarian begins to let his softer side shine through. But is that kind of a thing, Eric? Like, because I've noticed that in even anime. Like, at the beginning, they'll have somebody that's a total hard ass. But by the end of the anime, like if it's through seasons or whatever, they kind of let.
Yeah, it's called tsundere.
Ah, okay.
In this case, it's a little bit more like he's a strict commander and he's focused on the mission.
Freak 5 says, good evening, grinders. Good evening to you, Freak 5. Man, I got through a sentence talking about Free Five without Exile.
This isn't quite Sundari, but it's similar.
Yeah. No, it looks cool. It's probably something you'll check out, Eric, and we'll probably hear about soon. All right, next story, Eric.
Next story is from RPG site as well, and it's about the DLC that's finally dropping as a result of the Xenoblade Chronicles 2 expansion pass. So if you bought the expansion pass, you're getting your first set of stuff.
Yeah. What are we getting in this pack, Eric?
There are quests that you can only play per like chapter. So if you're on like chapter 2 and there's a one the rest of the quests won't be available until you get to the appropriate chapters. But the new quests are A Passion of the Artisan, MIA Nopon, Industrial Sort of Tor, Midnight Feasting, and The Lone Watchman. And the item pack 3 consists of a Driver's Essential Set 2, 10 rare core crystals, 1 legendary core crystal, 1 overdrive protocol, which I'm not sure how those work in the game because I haven't got that far. But Tor's favorite thing, which if you give a character their favorite thing, your affinity then will increase, and that will help them learn new skills. Three juicy samads, and Poppy's favorite thing, which is 3 fizz juices, and charming driver gear, which is accessories, and it says it does auto balancing, which I guess keeps you from getting staggered or something. Maybe
that's kind of cool. And I see that they're doing they fix some issues with this update patch, which is always a nice thing to see. I'll be talking a little bit about patches later on too. So, anything else we need to know about this?
I heard one of the bigger problems I've seen people complain about the quest is that the rewards for those quests aren't all that great, and there's lots of them.
Underwhelming.
Yeah. Not to mention when you get too many quests, for whatever reason, even though the other quests aren't active, you'll be able to go find other quest markers. Or sometimes when you're on a quest, there'll be multiple objectives, and the compass will be cluttered with markers, and you can't tell where some of them accurate readings are because they could just clump up together and the numbers blend.
Yeah, it's that. I don't think that's a big deal. I think you can zoom in. I saw a criticism of that, and I think you can zoom in and
you can't zoom in
on the map. You can't. That sucks.
Well, on the map you can, but
that's what I'm saying.
But if you're going through the overworld and you need to find out where how many steps are you're close to in proximity, it might become a little bit difficult.
I guess.
And the map itself wasn't well done, but they might have fixed it, so they might make more markers now. But who knows?
Yeah. Well, whatever. I mean, that's what patches are for, man. Let's move on to the next story coming to us from RPG site. Little Witch Academia, Chamber of Time, listed with a February 20 release date. Seems that side-scroller RPG, Little Witch Academia, Chamber of Time, set to, which I just said. Damn it, I hate when they do that. If a post on German PlayStation blog is anything to go by. While Bandai Namco hasn't announced a release date through any of their official channels, the blog post lists several of Bandai Namco's upcoming game for the PS platforms, and a February 20 date is listed for Little Witch Academia. So, and then there's a little description. I don't know much about the game. The anime, I saw the... what is it, a movie that you watch before
there's
the series?
There's like 2 movies.
Yeah, I saw one of the movies. I liked what I saw. It was kind of a short movie, so I need to finish watching the other movie.
I didn't really care for the dub.
Ah, yeah. Well, I mean, unfortunately, that's what I'm stuck with on Netflix. But I think I found a solution to that, which I'll be talking later. Next story, Eric.
Next story. You can watch it subtitled. It's just I tried watching it dubbed and it's like immediately it's like nah.
Problem is I don't know what a good Japanese version is. You know what I mean? Like I don't know what's good with Japanese voice acting. So, you know, the only thing I got to go by is like dubs. All right, Eric, what do we got next?
Well, we've got a release date for Strange Journey Redo.
This is kind of exciting.
It is going to be coming out on May 15th.
That's a little ways away, but that's cool.
If you noticed in the article, they mentioned that they changed the box art for the North American release because the character Alex is supposed to be holding a gun and pointing it at, I guess it could be perceived as it pointing at you, but it doesn't really look like a gun. I mean, it is one, but it's not shaped like a real world gun.
I don't understand why they are so worried. Like, Nintendo's
I don't think it's that. I think it's more like not only stores, but the ESRB has guidelines about what can be on a box. Otherwise, the rating has to go up.
That's really stupid. Like,
is weird because it's already rated M. It's pretty high anyway.
It's like who cares? Like honestly, like... censorship like this
The only problem I could see was it's an M-rated game, but it could be sold along with games that aren't M-rated, and children might get offended or something.
The
parents of children, because they're honestly they're the ones that react to this shit.
Like the only reason why this should be a thing is like I understand like in music, right? You have a lot of creative artists in the heavy metal genre that have a lot of offensive covers, and you don't. I mean, I wouldn't want my kids walking.
Here's the solution: you should do what Toys R Us did a long ass time ago. Lock all these games behind a box that you can't see.
Yes.
And then you get a ticket in the middle of the store somewhere. You take the ticket to the fucking clerk, and they'll give you the fucking game.
Like that. That's
problem
a sensible,
solved.
Right. That's a sensible solution. I think it's also a cheaper solution. Like, to change box art like because you think the gun's like offensive to some people is just ridiculous. Like it sort of reminds me like back in the day when Body Count's Cop Killer album came out. Like they couldn't even have that box art out in the open. It was just ridiculous. Like I mean, talk about stifling like creativity. Like I might not want my kids to walk by. And
that way, when it comes, if you still need images for these tickets, like you just have a cross section that doesn't have that.
I just don't understand. Let's say I'm walking with I don't want like my kids to inadvertently see like a Cannibal Corpse cover because those are pretty brutal, right? Like, or maybe I do, but you know, at least give people the option, put a black cover on it. That way, you know, when you get it home, you can take that out and there's the art. You know, that in its full glory, like it, all that shit makes zero sense to me. Like there are ways around it. You know what I mean? Like, and plus, like you said, Eric, it's a rated M game. Like really, we can't handle a gun on the cover. I mean, get real. It's ridiculous.
A fake looking gun at that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just stupid. I don't know if that has to do with Nintendo or the ESRB. Like whatever the case is, just ridiculous. But
not only that, but like Nintendo's still stuck very much in the mentality that they were 20 years ago, where mentions of God can't be referenced in the game, like Xenoblade 2. Instead, they have to call it the generic architect.
That's just ridiculous. All right, next story, Eric.
Which is weird because none of the character models have been altered, because that was a big problem with games like Fire Emblem.
Yeah. All right, what do we got next on the docket, Eric?
So, like, we change these. It's almost like alchemy. It's like equivalent exchange. You get one thing uncensored, but you get another thing censored in return.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the next story, Eric.
Next story, it's a new Gundam Breaker game called New Gundam Breaker.
Yeah, that's
which
that's
the fourth entry into the Gundam Breaker series of the games, and it's the first Gundam Breaker game that's actually been officially localized for North America. And I'm not talking about importing a game that has English subtitles in it.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is big news. I'm looking at it. It looks kind of pretty. They're using the Unreal Engine, it says. Good news there.
In case anybody doesn't know, this is the game where you're basically playing with a bunch of Gundam model kits, and
yeah.
you can customize it and make a bunch of crazy stuff. Like, it's kind of like Dragon Ball Fusions before Dragon Ball Fusions existed, but like you're swapping out parts instead because you're robots.
It's kind of cool. It's all right. I'm looking at it. It looks all right. It has me mildly.
They said it. Think Diablo. I don't know if Diablo's accurate because it's not an RPG like that. But Armored Core, yeah, definitely.
God, I'll be talking about Diablo later. Freak Five asking where is Break. And Wyland says he's playing Halo. No, he had to work today, so yeah, I locked him in the dungeon so Mug won't be lonely. Yeah, exactly. All right, next story comes to us from RPG site. This is a nifty little nugget. I don't know how true this is, but it kind of makes sense to me. South Park Fractured Butthole Switch version seen at an Australian retailer, of all places, Australia, but. It says it's scheduled for March 13th, and that actually doesn't sound realistic to me. Like, to see this ported over to the Switch, I see maybe
that quickly? No.
Maybe a late 2018.
Unless they were working on it along with the other versions, it was just going to take longer.
That's also a possibility. I don't exactly know what could take longer, you know, for this game to work on the Switch. Like, it should just be a fairly easy port. I don't see
why.
Well,
porting it would be easy. Porting it well would be harder.
Yeah, well, that's true too. But I mean,
they probably
want to
optimize it.
I mean,
and plus all the DLCs out now, so I think maybe they're planning on launching it with all the DLCs.
Ah, that may be. So maybe March is accurate. I don't know, but it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see if this will be out on the Switch. It might be the version that I get, depending on how well it plays. But all right, next story, Eric.
And it might be coming packaged with the first game too, so there's that. They have to code all that too.
Yeah. All right, Eric, what's going on with the next story?
But Fantasy Hero Unsigned Legacy is coming to Switch on January 25th, which is a 2014 PS Vita action RPG.
Yeah.
And it says Arc System Works is bringing Fantasy Hero Unsigned Legacy to the Nintendo eShop on January 25th for $9.99.
Wow, that's a good price point.
Or, well, this is a Japanese game. Who knows if it'll be localized, but it's approximately 1,200 yen.
Yeah. If they bring it over, I think there'd be a market for it on the Switch. The Switch is kind of doing things right, man. All right, speaking of Nintendo,
it kind of reminds me of what maybe Rent-A-Hero might have been if it had gone the action route.
Speaking of Nintendo, Nintendo Labo, or as I like to call it, Labia. No, I'm just kidding. Nintendo Labo build and play Toy-Con kits announced for the Switch. I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but
there was a direct this week. And
yeah.
Interestingly enough, there wasn't one in North America, but there was one in Europe and Japan.
Weird.
Probably because we just had one the week before, but who knows.
But basically what this thing is like it comes in a kit. It's a cardboard cutout type thing that you build different things. Like I saw a fishing rod with one. There was a backpack with another, a robot with another. And you can use it in conjunction with the software that it comes and, you know, to play mini games and probably other cool stuff later on.
It's using infrared to do all this stuff, too.
Yeah, probably other cool stuff later on down the road. Like I saw, like a piano that you could make. There was some other things. I mean, it's interesting. I don't see myself, you know.
I'm not a creative, probably won't take advantage of this.
I don't see myself utilizing this, but I can see where this would be. Just a ton of fun for kids, you know. But the only problem I see with it is that it is cardboard, and kids aren't kids aren't really easy on toys. So I could see where this.
Well,
the
cardboard's
kind of
easy to replace. The kits with the software, that's the expensive stuff.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like the cardboard's not easy to replace, Eric. Like you're not going to be able to just buy. You know, a piano cutout of cardboard without getting one of these kits. Like, I guess you could maybe.
No, I think they're going to sell, like, separate things that go with kits, but the kit itself.
Not sure, dude. I think it just comes with the kit. I mean, I guess you can get around that by, you know, printing out stuff on paper and then tracing that onto a piece of cardboard. I could see where that might work. But, I mean, this is fun in its concept. It's textbook Nintendo. Nintendo knows how to do things right with software and with dealing with kids. There's one thing that nobody can accuse Nintendo of is it's not, you know, is being kid friendly, and they are very kid friendly, and this just goes along with that. I mean, in all honesty, I don't understand why like somebody like Microsoft didn't like do something like this with the Kinect.
Why not Sony did the Wonder Book? That went nowhere.
Yeah. No, but I mean, like Microsoft could easily take in the Kinect, for instance, and like let's say you have a real fishing rod, like you put it up in front of the Kinect, and it, you know, adds that to a game, or you know, I mean, there could have been so much things that could have been done with that they didn't do, and it seems like Nintendo's kind of picking up on that. I don't know how long this is going to last, or if it's just going to be a fad, but it's an interesting concept. I'm kind of curious to see what developers do with it. That's the main thing. All right, Eric, what do we got next?
Speaking of the Kinect, apparently adapters are going for a lot on eBay. I'm going to ask my brother if he doesn't mind if I sell it.
A connector?
They go like for about $300.
For the
Kinect.
Oh, the Kinect?
It is literally just a camera adapter.
Oh, boy. that's muy
expensive.
Some
people actually want that shit.
Yeah, I guess. More power to you if you want it.
Apparently, they use them in hospitals.
Yeah. All right.
So that they can track your movement and you could do like precision surgery with it. Yeah.
All right, Eric. Next story, please.
Next story would be Dissidia Final Fantasy Opera Omnia is also coming west.
Yeah.
This is this winter, but they probably mean like 2019.
Probably, dude.
Early 2019.
You never can trust anything coming from Square, dude. Like, it's always, like, put back, but yeah.
Because, like, it's winter now, so, like, is it going to come out soon, or is it going to come out by the end of the year?
It's basically a non-story, dude. We'll move on until we get something more solid on it.
But it's basically a version of Dissidia for phones.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the next story from Silicon Era. Saturday Morning RPG is Limited Run Games' first Switch title. So that's kind of exciting.
Oh, wait. Actually, this looks more like an actual RPG. Never mind.
Okay.
But,
All right. Are we moving on yet, Eric, or do you have more to say? All right. Back in October 2017, Limited Run Games teased people and said it would be working on physical copies of Nintendo Switch games. Today it was announced the first title would be Saturday Morning RPG. That's kind of cool. And it'll bring it into the spring of 2018 with physical copies only available through Limited Run Games. Perspective box art for the game was also released, and that doesn't look super exciting. It looks very basic box art, but that's not why people get games from Limited Run Games. Limited Run.
Yeah, well, if you're getting something from Limited Run Games, you're probably almost not getting it.
Yeah, exactly. They do very. I mean, I think they're changing their business model, though. I think they've gotten big enough to where they can do bigger releases, but they've had some pretty decent releases in the past.
Story here is that they're doing Switch stuff now instead of just Vita stuff. Yep.
All right, speaking of Switch, Eric, next story.
Next story is about how Freedom Planet is probably coming to the Switch.
It's non-story too.
Anyways, this is another Nintendo Switch port has been teased. Freedom Planet official Facebook page has released an image suggesting the game will be hitting Nintendo Switch, and then has a picture of a Switch with the soundtrack to the game on top of it.
Yeah, exactly. There's no confirmation on that at all. But
the real question is, are they going to be doing physical releases?
Yeah. All right. But
I imagine that they're doing this ahead of Freedom Planet 2's release, which will probably also see development on PS4 and Switch and the Xbox One.
Yeah.
Or maybe not the Xbox, because I'm pretty sure the Xbox One doesn't even have the first game.
Hmm. I know what they do have, Eric, on the Xbox One. That's Crypt of the NecroDancer. But that, coming to us from Silicon Air, is coming out on the Switch in Japan on February 1st.
And later everywhere else.
Yeah, it's on
it's
the
weird to release a game that was made in the West in Japan on a platform first.
It's a procedural dungeon-type game from what I can remember when I read it on Xbox. They had it on sale recently.
It's hard as fuck, too. Oh,
what's
boy.
That? Yeah, it's a tough game to play. But
I can't get the feel for the rhythm down. And then there's the RNG working against you because it's a roguelike.
Yeah, it's definitely a rhythm-based game. Like, I saw a little bit of it. I was curious. I was intrigued. I was going to pick it up, but, the difficulty kind of turned me off. I was watching other people play it.
I also hate the fact that
very difficult.
What's that? I hate the fact that the game didn't have proper joypad support on the PC.
Yeah. Freak 5 says all games are tough for Frank. That's actually not true.
Hey, Freak, if you want to call in and then be a guest with us,
yeah,
then feel free.
Yeah, feel free. Lines are open. I'm getting better, Freak 5. I'm getting back in the swing of things. I'll be talking a little more about that later.
You'll be Robo Frank.
Yeah, exactly. All right, next.
But
next,
for video games.
Yep, next story, Eric.
Next story is about Eden's Last Sunrise, which is a tactical RPG. And it says, choose magic or science to fuel your abilities in tactical RPG, Eden's Last Sunrise.
Yeah.
And the character models look kind of boring, but maybe has a good story about it.
Yeah. The
players will either choose either the science or magic faction, so science versus magic. Hmm.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of a downer. It looks like a typical tactical RPG, to be honest. I mean, that doesn't set itself apart, really. I mean, visually. But like you said, maybe story-wise it'll be better. Freak 5 says Frank didn't beat Adventure until he was able to Google a walkthrough. How dare you, sir? There would be too much background noise for him to call in now, he says. No worries.
Did you get that Atari, box game set? I don't know if there was an Xbox One version of it.
No,
there was a PS4 version of it.
I played enough Atari back in the day that I don't need to relive all that stuff, man. It's really not, gaming has advanced so much that, to go back and play Atari games is, not really worth it.
Anyways, the game's got a Kickstarter, but you can play a demo on itch.io for this.
Yeah. Like I said, it looks very bland. Maybe the story makes up for it, if anybody's played it.
Well, it's got 2 years ahead of it, so maybe they can update the visuals.
Yeah, maybe if somebody's played this, they can let us know what their impressions are of it. All right, next story comes to us from Gamatsu. Nippon Ichi Software announced Liar Princess and the Blind Prince, Project Nightmare and Disgaea remake. So that's all pretty interesting. I saw a little quick
video. So I'm wondering when they do a remake of Disgaea.
Yeah, I was looking at a video for, I believe, Liar Princess and the Blind Prince. It looks like one of those escort mission-esque type games, but
it's the same type of game
in the vein of something like Limbo or something. So, I mean, it looks okay. It looks interesting. I wouldn't mind playing it.
It's basically the same as Rose in the Twilight and Hotel Neek.
Yeah, looks all right. I did not see any video on the Disgaea remake, but I am curious about that. I'm wondering if the remake is going to be every bit as good as the original. I don't like
I like the idea for Liar Princess that you're basically a Mimikyu from Pokemon.
Yeah. Let's see. Freak 5 says he just realized the game he wants them to make for the PlayStation VR. What is that? Friday the 13th?
Probably something foreign related.
Probably. Something with the Western grip. Yep.
Yeah, you hit it.
Leisure Suit Larry game. Yeah, that way you don't get in trouble when you get hands-on, Freak 5. I can understand why you want that game. All right, last story, Eric.
Last story is Witcher 100 Night 2 has been dated, and it's coming out in North America on March 27th and March 30th in Europe.
Yeah. This game looks pretty. It looks sort of like a Japanese RPG take on Diablo. Like, it looks good, man. Like,
But the problem with the first game is that it had a lot of mechanics that kind of weighed it down. Mm-hmm. And while this game doesn't look like it's going to fix any of that, it might at least be refining them so they're not as annoying to deal with. But the biggest problem for the first game was that the protagonist, Metalia, was a... Or Metallica, if you play the Japanese version. But yeah. Was insufferably and completely insane psychopath, basically. Ah.
So, I mean, that would be a selling point for me, not a drawback.
No, well, if you actually played the game, you'd understand why it's a drawback.
Yeah, probably. But it looks pretty, dude. I've got decent hopes for this game.
But, I mean, it doesn't look like that's going to change, but maybe she's less damning of a protagonist in this one.
I guess. We'll have to see, but...
It's weird, because you want her to die by the end of the game, but that's, like, supposedly the bad ending, even though it's the good ending, because, you want her to die, but the good ending is supposedly one where you spare her life.
Hmm. All right, well, that's the news for us this week in RPG news. No, I don't see anything from Twitter. Of course, I don't have access to that at the moment. We'll wait for next week. Maybe somebody will put something in there. If you have a comment or question for Grinders, just tweet at RPGrinders on Twitter, and we will mention you on the show. And mention your comment and respond in kind. Eric, what have you been playing, man?
This homie discount, I don't think I put that one in.
I put in a homie discount. I forgot. But Sony's having a flash sale. They got games like Life is Strange, Dark Cloud 2, Rogue Galaxy for $5. I bought Life is Strange on the Xbox. I have not played it yet. I did play Dark Cloud 2. Dark Cloud 2 is an underrated game. And for $5, it's really worth it. Rogue Galaxy is actually really worth it for the content you get. There's tons of content in Rogue Galaxy. I played it for the PS2, but now you can get it for $5, less than $5 on PlayStation. They got a couple more sales in there too, but nothing, you know, over $5. So, you know, now's the time to get some. Cool games. We're only $5. All right. What have you been playing, Eric?
I've been playing more Call of Arcs Malice. I finally finished that game.
Yeah.
So expect a review of that soon.
Ooh.
Some more Ace Attorney 4. I played a little bit of Drive Girls, and yeah, it's like, yep, this is a Tamsoft hack and slash game that's kind of boring, actually. Mm-hmm.
That sucks. That's disappointing.
So it's on the wrong console. I mean, the Vita is missing 2 and L and R buttons that the game probably needs, and not to mention the L3 and R3 buttons for lock-on and other like functions that would make the gameplay better.
That's disappointing. What else have you been playing, Eric?
But I also played a little bit of Mary Skelter, which is a dungeon RPG, dungeon crawling RPG.
Yeah.
Which hopefully will end up being better than Make You a Labyrinth of Death and Moe Crystal.
Freak 5 says he's been playing Elder Scrolls Online and Friday the 13th. When I get a PlayStation, which should be fairly soon, Freak 5, I'm going to pick up Friday the 13th. I think that would be a ton of fun to play. Like, I wouldn't be any good at it, but, you know. I'll still give it a go. And then he says, oh, awesome. I was planning to buy Dark Cloud 2. Yeah, pick it up right now, dude. It's like less than $5. I mean, I think you can pick it up for like $4.79 or something. Like, they've got a pretty good sale on PlayStation. I've been playing, of course, Marvel Puzzle Quest. I play that at least one time a day just to get the Deadpool daily rewards. Mad Max, did I finish it? That's for you to decide. I'll tell you as soon as I talk about the other games I've been playing. Diablo 3, I played a little bit of Diablo 3, and Diablo 3 is fucking awesome. I'm not good at any game, Freak 5 says. Steridan, which is a procedurally generated shmup, bullet hell shmup. It's fun. I have a lot of fun with that game. It's not super difficult. It's actually fun to play. It's not like one of those bullet hell games that, you know, takes super precision to get anywhere. It's pretty decent. I like it quite a bit. Nice power-ups to the spaceships, stuff like that. A little bit of Witcher 3. And I can't stop marveling at how good Witcher 3 looks, man. And you know, I also laud it for having a 60-frame mode as well, even though it doesn't reach 60 frame all the time. Like, you don't really notice the hit it takes on graphics at all. And in my opinion, that's the way to play the game. It's everything that it's cracked up to be. I think Witcher 3 is probably one of the greatest games of all time from what I played. Like, I can't wait to get more into that game. So, yeah, there you go. All right, we got some reviews this week. Eric, why don't we start with your reviews? Please don't spoil anything. I want to see all three of these movies that you got for review. So what are we looking at for reviews?
So I watched The Shape of Water. I went saw that on Monday, and then after that I saw The Disaster Artist. So we'll deal with The Shape of Water first.
Yeah.
It is what I could best describe as an adult version of a fantasy story. Hmm. With kind of takes a little bit elements from Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
And
Creature from the Black Lagoon, maybe.
Yeah, but reverses the roles. Instead of the heroine being the mermaid, it's actually a human. Well, maybe.
Yeah.
Because the movie does hint at the possibility that she might not be human. Hmm. But, anyways, I'm not going to talk into the plot. Just go see the movie. But,
yeah, I heard it's really good, Eric. Like, would you?
But there is some political subtext, which is good because it is a period piece. But I was thinking through the movie that, like, a lot of what's going on back then feels like it's going on back now. So it's like repeating history.
Yeah, no question. If you know anything about the history of Guillermo del Toro and his directorial exploits and adventures, you know that he always has kind of a political edge to him. Like, I remember watching
also the guy that plays the sorry,
that's all right, go ahead.
I was just saying the guy that plays the merman, I think he also did Abe in the Hellboy movies.
Yeah, well, that's cool.
So it's the same person in the same costume.
Huh. Interesting. I like Guillermo del Toro as a director. Like, he's one of the few directors that can actually make you like really truly feel what the actors are feeling when they make these movies. Like, a movie, if you haven't seen it yet, which is one of my all-time favorite movies, is called The Devil's Backbone. It's a ghost story, but it's, man, is that movie good. Like, it's
I couldn't say the same for a movie like Crimson Peak, though.
No, Crimson Peak had its pluses. Like, it wasn't the greatest movie in the world, but, you know, not every director creates masterpieces every time that they go out, unless your name is fucking Kubrick. You know, like, there's... You know, there are high points.
I don't know about that either, because I didn't like Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, man, I love that movie.
I didn't hate it, but it was like, I don't understand why you like this.
God, dude, that's a great movie. I could do a whole show on that movie and why it is great. But basically, like, Guillermo del Toro's like kind of in the same vein. Like, he's just a creative genius. I don't know how he is in his personal life, and I don't care. He's created some of the best movies I've ever seen. Like, you know, I mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned Kronos, but that's another great movie. Devil's Backbone is fantastic. I like Pacific Rim. I know that movie got hammered, but he's just a good director. Pan's Labyrinth.
Watch that Trollhunters series that's on Netflix.
I have not, but there's a movie called Pan's Labyrinth, which is another great, epic, scoped movie that is just a brilliant, brilliant movie. Like, Guillermo del Toro just has it when it comes to directing movies. And I heard The Shape of Water is fantastic, so I'm glad to hear. What would you give Shape of Water, Eric?
I'm going to give it a 10 out of 10.
Wow, that good. Yeah, I definitely want to see it. That's high on my list of movies. All right, moving on to something maybe not as good, Disaster Artist.
The Disaster Artist is a, I guess you call it a docudrama.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be good.
Because it is a movie that is about the creation of The Room without actually being a documentary.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a movie. There's no question about that.
But it stars the Franco brothers with James Franco playing the role of Tommy Wiseau and Dave Franco playing the role of Greg, his friend. I forget his last name.
Oh, I forgot his friend's last name too. But yeah.
And it's about how they both decide to move to LA to try to make it in Hollywood, but they can't make it, so they end up making their own movie. and Tommy's Wiseau's eccentricism causes problems for the creation of the film. And in a way, in many ways, it feels like The Room was actually an autobiography of what they were going through at the time, or maybe some bits from his previous like encounters in his life as well.
Hmm. It's always interesting to see an artist's journey, and Tommy Wiseau is he's not the best filmmaker in the world, but man, talk about passionate. Like, that dude. Like, if there's one thing you can't accuse Tommy Wiseau is not, you know, lack of passion. The guy definitely has it when it comes to that. So, kudos to him for making the movie. I'm pretty sure
the funniest thing about The Room was the actor that played the drug dealer probably was the most serious out of all of them.
yeah. But, you know, I have yet to see The Disaster Artist too, Eric. What are you giving Disaster Artist?
I'm going to give it an 8.5.
Yeah, that's a very high recommendation. I want to see it. I really do. All right, Eric, you got one more review to do before I get on to my quick reviews. What do you got for us?
Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, which is probably the last time we'll see a Jumanji movie, actually, because of the way the film ends.
Wow. Don't tell us how it ends.
I mean, sure, they could always make some bullshit reason for another Jumanji film if they feel like it later.
With how much
maybe
money?
Maybe in another 20 years.
With how much money that movie is making, Eric, I guarantee there will be a sequel to it. I guarantee.
I don't know how they'll explain away that, though, but
we'll see. I mean, like you said, they always come up with some bullshit reason to get a sequel out there. I mean, you know. But so anyways.
This is definitely a more comedic take on Jumanji than the first film, because the first film, let's face it, movies in the 90s were all about action, and it was constantly in your fucking face, and they're always being chased by something or attacked by something.
I remember not liking the first Jumanji.
It was okay.
I saw the ads for this latest Jumanji, and
that's Robin Williams, and you're like, oh my god, it's Robin Williams.
Yeah, well, that's a huge problem. Like, I'm not a Robin Williams fan in every sense of the word.
That's like me and Vince Vaughn. It's like Vince Vaughn just ruins every movie he's in.
You know what? I just saw a Vince Vaughn movie that might change your view, dude, and it's called Cell Block 99. And dude, that movie's brutal. Like that's Vince Vaughn, like at his finest, I guess.
Who played Norman Bates in the Psycho remake? Was that him?
Yes, and it was awful. No question, it was awful. All right, Jumanji, welcome to the jungle. What do you want to tell us?
Basically, instead of a board game, now it's a video game, and it is in many ways a satire of video games. Hmm. I mean, they didn't like throw references out everywhere, like. And in fact, a lot of them are actually pretty subtle because I didn't catch some of them. I saw a post on Twitter that was like, "Oh, so they referenced that game, did they?"
Yeah, I mean, a lot of Easter eggs in movies nowadays, but dude.
But as a satire, instead of satiring like specific video games, it satires tropes.
Mm. Well, I guess that's okay. That's kind of welcome.
Concept of lives and sharing lives.
Did the humor hit home with you in Jumanji, Eric? Like, was it?
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't like anything like really gut busting laughing. But then again, the audience was small in the theater, so people tend to laugh a lot more when there's other people laughing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Laughing is kind of contagious.
It is. It's definitely contagious.
But there's some jokes in there, I guess.
Yeah. All right. So,
I give this movie a 7.
Yeah, that's cool. That's well above
just
average.
About where it's getting anyway.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Sounds.
I liked it more than the original film.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said earlier, Eric, I really wasn't a huge
especially
Robin
since
Williams
like
fan.
They actually have a reason to play the game this time. It's like the board game was just like chaos, and this has actual structure to it.
Yeah, well, that's cool.
It's like what are you supposed to be doing in Jumanji the board game? It's like so it's basically Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah,
and just happens.
Yeah, well, and it doesn't help that Robin Williams was in the movie, like in my opinion. But you know, all right, I'm gonna move on to my reviews. I'm just gonna do these real quick.
Maybe they should remake Aladdin, but like replace Robin Williams with Don.
Oh my, that's like one of the worst Disney movies in my opinion too. Like I did not like Aladdin, and I know I'm gonna get killed for this, but
I like Aladdin despite the Orientalism in it.
Yeah.
But
I have my problems
because I can appreciate it as like entertainment rather than like cultural significance.
I guess. I mean, like I have a huge problem with Disney movies in general. Like they always like even The Lion King I have a problem with because like you know, Scar was the darker character in color, and it's always like the darker skinned person that's the bad guy, and that's
and Mulan is like the leader of the Huns was darker skinned than the rest of them.
Yeah,
even though they were all technically white or Asian.
Yeah, well, you said it, dude. They were white, like whiter than white. But real quickly, my reviews. Mad Max, did I finish it or did I not? That's the question. And I'm here to say that I...
Also, Hercules is awful. Don't ever watch Hercules.
I like Hercules. How dare you disparage Hercules? I like Hercules.
Disney's Hercules?
Yes, Disney's Hercules. How dare you?
I liked some of the musical numbers, but the movie can go fuck itself.
I like Hades, even though I don't like James Woods personally. I really do like Hades.
Even though I like Danny DeVito, he was just annoying in the film.
Yeah, that was kind of not the good part of that movie. But anyways.
And it reminds me of a terrible memory from Kingdom Hearts 2. Get on the Hydra's back!
Yeah. Oh, man. That battle. All right, my review of Mad Max, did I finish it? I did finish it. I don't know how I finished it, but I did. They force you to do a race at the very end, which I very much do not like racing. Like, that's not my thing, but I just used my weapons effectively, and I gutted through it. It took me 3 or 4 tries after my initial 30 to 40 tries before, but I did beat it. My review stands. I'm actually going to lower it just a little bit to an 8 out of 10. I like the combat, but man, there's a lot of bugs in that game, and that's just That's just Warner Brothers being Warner Brothers. But you can tell the guys over at Avalon Studios have a lot of fucking talent. But there's some disappointing things in it, man. Like I saw a lot of drawing and popping. Like, to me, that's just inexcusable in modern gaming, especially with something as you know, heavy as an Xbox or a PS4. Like, there should just be no reason for that at all. Like, if you have to take a cut on graphic design, then, you know, take the cut and make it, you know, to where, you know, you're getting the frames and you're getting no drawing and popping. There's just no excuse. I mean, I would have given this game actually higher because it did something with the Mad Max realm that the movies have yet to cover. I mean, they did a little in Fury Road, but they gave Max kind of a good backstory and kind of that's why I was asking on Twitter the other day, and I think it was Dungeon Buster told me, but what is the time frame? Like, what's the reference in time to where Mad Max takes place? Like, I got a sense that it was like kind of real near future. Like, I don't know, but they do a really good job with the they call them history relics in there. But I got all the history relics. I was as close to beating and completing to 100% in Mad Max as any game ever. So it might be something that I go and revisit and get 100%. I don't quite know yet, but for now I'm pretty done with Mad Max. It's a good game. I like the battle system. It's semi reminiscent of the Batman games. So yeah, 8 out of 10. I watched a movie called The Curve. I like The Curve quite a bit. I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10. It's basically you could basically make this movie into a stage play and it would work. It's about a woman that gets that picks up a stranger and ends up driving her vehicle off a cliff to avoid, you know, this hitchhiker and, you know, getting killed by the hitchhiker. But she gets trapped in there and he kind of tortures her and makes her, you know, feel uncomfortable and stuff like that. But it's a good movie. It's got a neat little ending to it, so I recommend watching it. It's on Netflix. We talked a couple weeks ago about the movie Bright, and I saw like a little piece of it before, but I saw the whole movie last night, and there's a lot of good things going for Bright. It's basically present day, but with fantasy elements like orcs and elves and you know, stuff like that. The problem with Bright is they didn't give it a lot of backstory. I mean, Will Smith was fine in it. I'm not a huge Will Smith fan, but he did a good job in this movie. The guy who played the orc was the standout to me. I really, really liked his take on the orc. There's something for everybody to like in this movie, but if you're just jumping into this movie, like for me, they didn't give it, like you hear stories about what happened 2,000 years ago and et cetera, et cetera. And I'm thinking it's kind of a reference to biblical happenings and stuff like that. If ever a movie needed a prequel, it's this movie. Like, I want to see what happened 2,000 years ago to bring us up to this point in history. You know, like, this movie, I'm normally not a fan of prequel movies. I think they're kind of throwaway for the most part. But Bright could really use some backstory. Like, it really could. Like, I want to know, like, how, you know, things came to be in this world. But overall, I give it a 7 out of 10. I think it's a pretty good movie in its own right. It's got action, it's got violence, it's got some humor. The humor hit home most of the time. It definitely has a good message when it comes to race relations and stuff like that. One thing I did not like is they overuse stereotypes of different races, and sometimes not to full effect. Like, of course, the gang was Hispanic. You know, of course, you know, the black people were portrayed a certain way, et cetera. But it's a good movie. It's got some good messages. I just wish that they had done a little bit of backstory with it. And it screams prequel. Like, I hope when they do a new Bright, they do a prequel that shows us some of the battles and some of the other things that took place. But all in all, I liked it. I liked the take that it took on you know, modernism and fantasy and stuff like that. All right, let's move on to our stinkos. Eric, what is your stinko this week?
My stinko is about the Pope.
Ooh, the Pope gets it this week.
Yeah, this is from APnews.com.
Mm-hmm.
This is Santiago, Chile. Pope Francis accused victims of Chile's most notorious pile of slander Thursday and astonishing into a visit meant to help to heal the wounds of sexual abuse scandal that has cost the Catholic Church its credibility in the country.
Yeah.
Saint Francis said that until he sees proof that Bishop Juan Barros was complicit in covering up the sex crimes of the Reverend Fernando Caradima, such accusations against Barros are all calumny.
Yeah.
I can read more, but he basically needs a ridiculous amount of proof, even though he's got plenty of it.
There's plenty of proof, and it was kind of out of character for this Pope to kind of fire back on these. I mean, it's already, without being proven, it's been proven.
Apparently he doesn't have enough faith in their testimonies.
Exactly. The thing about this is like, how could the Pope not be complicit at this point in all this hiding of shit?
This is why he's saying he probably is complicit.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. Like, I always said, and I still think it to this day, I think Catholicism is kind of on its last legs. Like, if you can't figure out shit in countries like Chile that, you know, predominantly are Catholic, then you're not going to figure out anything anywhere. Like, it just, Catholicism is just dying. And I hope it dies. Like, just like Christianity.
It needs to die.
Yeah. Christianity, same way.
They're a relic from 2,000 years ago that never should have existed in the first place.
Yeah. It's just, almost all religion dies anyways. It's just a matter of time. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, like, if you look, I think there was a website, I think it's like, Graveyard of the Gods or something.com, where they basically went through all the religions, you know, from recorded history, and like every single religion dies out. Freak 5, speaking of religion, Freak 5 put in a link to Des Moines Register about what is this? I don't even know what this is. A bill.
Bible literacy class.
What's that? Oh, yeah. Bill would add Bible literacy class to Iowa public schools. This is the age of Trump. This is what it's bringing us, man. Like, seriously, like, I mean, I think if you want to do Bible as fiction and teach it that way, then I'm okay with that. Like, you know, if you want to go into it thinking that it's nonfiction, that's
teach it just like Greek mythology.
Yeah. That's BS. Like, that's honestly BS. Like, I don't understand that.
Then again, they're pushing Christianity, and this is obviously a fucking wedge strategy to get.
Yeah, I know, and it's weird. Like, it's just weird because Trump's not even a real Christian. Like, he doesn't practice religion. Like, he's, I don't know. It's just weird. Let's move on to my stinko. Let's see. Freak 5 says he's been listening to Jesus Mything in Action Volume 1. Yeah, it's good, man.
Are those like podcasts or something?
I think it is a podcast now. Yeah. Mine is Mick Mulvaney. He is the self-appointed leader of the Consumer Protection Agency. I can't remember the exact what do you call
acronym.
That acronym for the head? It's like CFPB or something like that. But basically, the agency that protects you from predatory lending and basically banks. And he's like one of the biggest swamp monsters there. And in his latest budget proposal for the CFPB, he requested zero money. How are you supposed to run a protection bureau with no money? Like, this is something just routine that other people that have been the head of that division have just went to Congress or to the president and said, we need this much money for the upcoming year. It's a book, Eric, he says. It to me, like, this just makes zero sense. Like, you're asking, basically Mick Mulvaney is there to destroy the CFPB. He's not there to, it's like Trump's pick for the EPA was Scott Pruitt, who is one of the biggest fucking, you know, corporation lackeys that there is. It's like his pick for almost any cabinet position. Rick Perry as the Department of Energy, head of the department. Really? Rick fucking Perry? Like, like, there's so many swamp monsters in Trump's cabinet. I don't even know where to begin. Like, people like Mnuchin, who is the Secretary of Treasury. And he talked about draining the swamp. Mnuchin is the very epitome of the swamp. He was a former Goldman Sachs executive. So if that doesn't tell you where the priority lies in this administration, I don't know what will. Plus the fact that it's mostly a racist, sexist cabinet. Like, it just, I mean, you go down the line. Like, these people, like Ben Carson, the head of Housing and Urban Development, he doesn't even know what that even entails. Like, he is grossly unqualified for that. Like, I don't know how most of these people got confirmed. Like, the Democrats have no spine. They just have no spine when it comes to shit like this. All right, let's move on.
Them to bend over and take it up the ass party.
They really are, man. That's a pretty apt descriptor. And people are talking about the Democrats taking over in 2018. What is that going to give you? Nothing. It just gives you a bunch of wusses that don't know how to govern and you know, are beholden to their donors. All right, let's move on to our sweetos. Eric, what's your sweeto this week?
My sweeto is that the Castlevania animated series is coming back in the summer.
I saw one dude in the comment section on one of the websites I went saying that he didn't like the first season of Castlevania, and I'm like, what is not to like about the first season of Castlevania other than it's too short?
Like, and they didn't play Castlevania music.
I mean, big deal. Like, the content was fine. I thought it was scary in parts.
It wasn't even really a season. It was literally the pilot.
Nah, yeah, it was like four episodes long, and I tell you what, that last episode, episode four of the first, I guess, quasi season of Castlevania was fucking epic, and I don't use that title lightly. I hate when people just use the word epic just to use it, but in this case, I thought it was, man, I don't see what more you could want from a Castlevania anime than what you got, like, except for more. And I'm glad that they're bringing it back for, I think it's eight episodes. It should be more, but yeah. You know, hopefully it'll do really well.
That's enough to fill out an actual season, so yeah. That works.
Yeah, I guess it works. But I'm hoping for more because, man.
Even though Netflix categorizes seasons by number of episodes that were ordered,
yeah.
Which is stupid, but yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. He's talking about the book in Chat Freak 5 is he's the author of another book called Nailed, the 10 Christian Myths that show Jesus never existed at all. I've made that argument quite a few times on Grindr.
You know, there's a point in being an atheist where I just don't give a shit about reading atheist material anymore.
I do. I still do. I mean, like,
sure, there might be stuff that's still interesting, but
well, there's stuff that's interesting, and there's different takes on different things. Like, I go back and read, like, God Delusion every once in a while, or God Is Not Great is my favorite, but
I mean, got Richard Dawkins books, but like they're stuff instead of stuff like that, it's like academic and it's about like the selfish gene or something like that.
Yeah, I know, but there's
even
still
though Dawkins is a fucking villain.
Dawkins is a dick, no question. But I'll have to check that one out because I've been saying it on Grinders for years. There are indicators that there never was a Jesus of the Bible ever existed. Like there were people named Jesus, but like a prophet and things happening in the way that the Bible portrays it. Like it just doesn't add up.
It's like Christians say that the Bible is the book of God because it's the word of God, but no, it's the word of men who were inspired by their belief in God.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fiction.
It is. Let's see. Freak Fight says he hopes if they start teaching that Bible class that atheist students will ask questions that the Christian students would never think of. I'm actually hoping for something a little different than that. I hope that they do start that class, the Christians actually ask questions. That's what usually turns a Christian into an atheist or a religious person into an atheist. You just start asking hard questions. That you get non-answers to almost all the time. Like it boggles my mind, like how people can think of the Bible so highly and they don't actually read it. Let's see. His sweeto is that he had an interview yesterday and he thinks it went good. Good luck, man. I hope you get it. He finds out Tuesday or Wednesday, pending a drug test. Oh, you're fucked then. Freak Five. Oh, and a criminal background check? You're doubly fucked, man. So, there you go. Yeah, but Castlevania coming back is awesome. I'm glad, man. I really like, especially that last episode, man. I thought it was some breathtaking stuff, and it set up the series quite nicely. My sweeto this week is, I actually got, a while back I ordered a TV stand. And it's nice, man, to have my TV on an actual stand and not a box. So that was cool. You don't smoke pot. Yeah, but ecstasy, man. Ecstasy. So, yeah, I got a TV stand for my 50-inch TV. And it's, you know, it's small and it's perfect. I wish it was slightly taller, but, you know, oh well. I mean, for what I paid, it's not bad. He doesn't do drugs, and he passed the criminal background check to adopt, he said. Yeah, man, but paying somebody the amount of money that you paid for that background check, you know what I'm saying? Like that under-the-table money. All right, Eric, anything else you want to talk about that's been on your mind?
We've got the 7 myths we can do this week.
Yeah, let's do a myth this week.
The myth is for this week is lots of cash means the company is healthy. It says Nintendo is doing great. They have $9 billion of cash in the bank.
Yeah.
I've seen people make similar statements about Nintendo and other companies over the years. Here's the deal: the company that you fawn over may very well have huge cash reserves, but that doesn't make them a healthy company. Does the company need cash? Absolutely. It's used for all kinds of things. But sitting on huge stores of cash is foolish. It doesn't grow your business. If you want to grow, you spend your cash on research and development, marketing, advertising, and investments. You purchase assets, the cash doesn't sit idly.
Yeah.
Don't go look to cash as a sign of a healthy company. And me and Frank were talking earlier about how people just accumulate wealth. And if you're running a company, it kind of makes sense to keep making money for these very reasons. But we were talking about something completely different.
Yeah, it makes sense in all regards, Eric. Like we were talking about making money. Like I don't understand. Like let's say I won $500 million in the lotto. That's what the latest jackpot was that was won, was like $500 million. Like you'd buy stuff, of course. Like maybe you'd buy a house or two, maybe three, and you'd go traveling and stuff. But, like, what do you have to need more money for? Like, I don't understand.
Unless you've got, like, a grand ambition, you don't need to accumulate wealth.
Yeah.
Like a madman.
Yeah, I mean, you can only, like, for instance, I was talking about Jeff Bezos. Jeff Bezos was just, I guess he was just appraised. That sounds kind of weird. But, like, at $105 billion, like, he's the probably the richest man in the world. He's made more money than Bill Gates ever did, and Bill Gates was always considered one of the richest, if not the richest person in the world. But like at a certain point, like you bought all your houses, you bought your cars, your stuff. Like what more in life is there? Like once you get up to a certain point, why do you need more money? Like it seems like people, once they get money, that's all they can think about, and that's all that they want to do.
I got some bad news. I'm going to add this to my stinkos.
Okay, go ahead, Eric.
Basically, the PC release of East 8 has been further delayed because they're still running into issues with the performance. But it's not going to affect the January 30th date for the patch for the PS4 and Vita versions of the game.
Yeah. Apparently, Bridget's listening to us on YouTube. She was having some Twitch problems. So, what's up, Bridget? Mm-hmm. To get back to my point, like, it just seems like once you get up to a certain amount of wealth, like, you can't, like, what do you need more wealth for? You know, you're not going to die with, I mean, you're going to die with it, and that's it. Like, you know, you can't take it with you. Like, what... I just don't understand, man. Like, the rich just get richer, and the more money you get, the more money you want. Like, yes, I could use more money, but, like, once you get up to a certain point, like, if you're making, like, $100,000 a year, like, that's a pretty good fucking wage.
So, yeah, to take it back to this, unless you're running a company and you constantly need money to keep coming in and you're spending it in the right places, you don't need to be Bezos and like have one more $1 million that you're earning that you could have been giving to your employees.
Yeah, like honestly, like what is another billion to Jeff Bezos? I mean, he's got 105 of them. You know, it's like 1 billion is like, man, that's like it's crazy money, man. Like that's just crazy money. $9 billion. Like, I don't know why people bring up Nintendo all the time when it comes to money. I mean, I guess it's because Nintendo always does pretty good. I think they've had like one or two quarters of. Go ahead, Eric. What did you hear?
Apparently, Destructoid hasn't been paying its freelance writers for like a year and a half.
Oh, what a shocker there!
But they could still afford parties at GDC.
That doesn't surprise me, man. Like, I think Sterling did a lot.
I think, even though I don't like Jed Whittaker, I think he's a fucking villain. I think that's part of the reason why he quit Detoid. It's like, he wasn't getting paid, so why stay?
Yeah. Well, I heard of a lot of bullshittery going on over at Detoid, man. Like, just a lot of shit. But, what else, man? Let's see, what else do I got? Did the government shut down? Or we'll find out at midnight tonight. What are my thoughts on that? What are your thoughts, Eric? Like, I'm, you know...
The Republican Party has never balanced the budget, and they won't this time.
No, they won't. They'll put a stopgap measure for another month, and then we'll have the same conversation in another month. And they'll always hold kids hostage.
And they'll keep blaming like the Democrats, like they always fucking do.
Yeah, and the Democrats
the ones that are responsible for this mess.
And the Democrats will fucking bend over and take it, like they always do.
And just say, yeah, we are bad, even though not really.
Yeah. One thing I did want to mention, like I'm not a huge Cory Booker fan. He's a Democrat. Is he from D.C. or I can't remember where Cory Booker comes from. But he like took this chick to task, man. The head of the Homeland Department of Homeland Security. I think her name is Kirsten. I can't remember her last name, but she's the head of Homeland Security. She was in the meeting where Trump called other countries shitholes. And I don't understand why they can't just admit that the president said that. Like, what are they fearful of? Like, the president said it. He means it. Like honestly, like, just admit that the guy's a fucking racist and move on. Like, let's just get past this point and get through it. I mean, unless Mueller can come up with something to get this guy out of office, which is increasingly becoming harder and harder. I actually think it's going to be more money laundering than anything. Then I just, let's just fucking move on from this. Let's get people, let's get real, you know, progressive people into positions. Like, I know there's somebody running up against Joe Manchin in West Virginia. I think her name is Paula Jean Swearengin. I would vote for her a million times over somebody who's more like a Republican, Joe Manchin, than anything. He pretends he doesn't know who his donors are, and that's all fucking horseshit. These people are beholden to their donors. They're not beholden to anybody else. So if anybody thinks the Democratic Party is great, they need to take a look at their representatives and see who they really take orders from, and that's the donors. They always vote. If it's not to do with social issues, they always vote the way that their donors want, you know. And you can look at a lot of these senators. Cory Booker is the biggest receiver of donations from Big Pharmacy, Big Pharma. Like, he does not want Big Pharma to go away. He's part of the swamp. But he did a really good job of taking down this Department of Homeland Security chick who was, you know, denying she heard anything or, you know, skirting around the issue. He basically said, you know, I've had many meetings in the Oval Office, and when this president speaks, he listens. So he pretty much shamed her, and people were trying to say that he was mansplaining to her, which was utter nonsense. Like, he treated her like he would have treated anybody else in that position. So there's a lot of bullshit that goes on in politics. And, you know, I'm hard on Cory Booker, but in this one instance, he did a decent job of putting this chick in her place and letting her know that people are watching. What that translates to, I don't know. You know, in all honesty, what does the Democrat Party stand for? That's another thing that, like, they don't even know. They don't, I mean, they came out with this new model or motto, a better deal. What's the better deal? Like, us just getting more of the same, more Hillary Clinton? Like, I saw a thing in the LA Times saying that there's no forerunner when it comes to the Democratic Party, and that's actually not true. There's one that nobody wants to talk about, and that's Bernie Sanders. It's weird. It's like they just overlook Bernie Sanders. He's the most popular politician, whether you ask Democrats or Republicans. He's the only guy that I've seen walk into a room of Republicans and had the Republican voters actually cheer and clap and understand that, you know, things could be better in this country if we just, you know, did things differently. But until we get money out of politics, it's that's the norm. You know, you got to get money out of politics. When people can vote their conscience and not, you know, be beholden to donors, it's a wonderful thing, you know. But racist president, Eric. I think the last truly racist, where you could really pinpoint down to recordings of him saying racist things, was Nixon. And it's no coincidence that there's a lot of things paralleling the Watergate conspiracy back in the day to what's going on with Russia. I don't like a lot of things that are coming out of this, like the Russian xenophobia that's going around, like everybody wary of Russians and Russian people and stuff like that. It's like, you know, we already had that nonsense happen with the Cold War. This is a little different. But what's your take, Eric, on the state of affairs right now in the United States?
I thought that by the time I was this age, we had gotten past that, and we almost were.
Yeah.
But it got all undone somehow.
Well, Trump happened, but it's not even like Trump is a symptom. He's not the entire problem. He's a symptom of the problem, you know. And it usually always boils down to follow the money. Like, you know, when people like Rebecca Mercer and the Mercer family can just buy votes, same thing with Soros and, you know, the Koch brothers, when you have billions of dollars and you have that much influence, that's when things get shady. You know, and it's always so pro corporate and against the American public.
Beginning to hate capitalism.
Yeah, capitalism isn't necessarily the greatest thing in the world. If implemented properly, it can be okay for some people, but you know, there'll always be people that are on the dark side of things. But anyways,
also, I don't think old people can be trusted with money.
Wow, that's a broad statement. I don't know about that, man. Like, maybe huge amounts of money in politics for sure. But all right, I think that's going to do it, Eric. We could end the show a little bit early today. It's not a problem. I'm not feeling the greatest anyways. What are your plugs this week, Eric?
I'm going to just plug the sites I've write for, like BostonBassBrigade.com, TotallyGN.com, VogNetwork.com, and HonestGamers.com.
Cool.
And there's my YouTube channel, Funny ET Man. Yeah. If I can find them, I'll probably do a snack video of like chocolate hazelnut Oreos.
We haven't had a snack review in a while, so that'd be
or funny. Maybe the zebra striped nutty bars.
God damn, I love those things. All right, Eric.
But the nutty bars or the zebras?
Both. Both, man. I'll take both. The zebra snack cakes are really good too. Bad for you, but good. Tastes good. All right.
Sure. That's for sure.
Thanks for everybody in chat. Freak 5 was in there. Bridget was in there. Wyland was in there.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Eric RBG.
Oh, I want to make quick mention too. Flabby
in my
Sock.
Patreon account.
All right. You done?
Yeah.
All right. I want to make mention of Flabby Sausage. He tweeted that he's been in Switzerland. I don't know what he was doing in Switzerland. We're gonna have to get more on that, man. But shout out to him and Flabby Sausage and everybody.
I was gonna say if he went to Amsterdam, he would be getting high.
Yeah, or Denver. I mean, you can get high in Denver just like you can in Amsterdam now. But yeah, thanks, Freak Five. Really appreciate it. Wyland was in there. Bridget was in there. Thank you guys so much. I know it was a shortened edition of RP Grinders today, but we'll be back next week, probably in full force with Breakman, and that's about it. All right, thank you guys so much. We really appreciate it. Stay safe this weekend. We want to see you back here next week. Until then, follow me on Twitter at Frank Branches, and I'm also on the Xbox, soon to be on the PlayStation, but RP Grinders on the platform of choice. All right, stay safe this weekend. We want to see you back here next week. Until then, we are out. Later, guys.